On today's episode of The Good Word, Mo Dakil joins us to discuss how the Celtics make you play perfect, how the Lakers don't do anything right, and how the Denver Nuggets are wasting the best of the rest of Nikola Jokic's career. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter, Yahoo Sports, and the host of this show. Before we get into the show today, a couple of bits of business to get into. If you haven't already, please check out The Good Word with Goodwill on YouTube and make sure you give us a rating and review wherever you are consuming this show. Today, we are joined by my man, Mo Dakil. Of course, he works for Bleacher. Before, he was a video coordinator with the Phoenix Suns and the LA Clippers. It has been a long time coming, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing well, but it was the San Antonio Spurs.
Spurs. Oh, dude, your bio, unless I read your bio wrong. My bad.
Unless I wrote my bio wrong, which isn't out of the realm of possibility.
No, that's on me. Look, the fact that you work for the Spurs means that, A, you have a lot of government secrets that you probably can't give up over there.
Can't give up a lot. I was only there 2 years.
Don't matter. That's institutional knowledge that no one of us here listening can actually attest to. So my bad on that. I wrote that wrong. I can't even put that on my producer. I wrote that. My bad. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. It's been a fun start to the season, so I'm pretty pumped.
Yeah, dude. Well, hey, are you going to Vegas for the NBA Cup?
I am not going to Vegas for the NBA Cup. Too much stuff. I just got back from Hawaii for Thanksgiving, and then I'm going again for Christmas. So I'm not, I was like, I might be trying to push the limits too much.
that's a long flight. Those are long flights. So makes sense. Vegas for me, I'm not a gambler. So it's not really my bag. So it'll basically be like the semifinal games and the final and whatever else the league has going on. And maybe like league get-togethers, there's a night you go out to dinner and you hang with people and everything else and you talk some shop and then everybody just tries to, get in where they fit in after that. Before we even get into some of the things, I really want to get into the Celtics and how they make you play perfect. But what are your thoughts overall on the Cup as we head into the knockout round and everything else that is going to transpire over the next 10 days or so?
I love it. I think the Cup's actually been a success after. I mean, it's just 2 years. I always say we have to give these things 5 years and really see where we're at. But, listen, last year we saw the guys all kind of amped up. And then this year we've seen it where the intensity of these games are actually leveled up a bit. I don't know if it's the courts or I don't know what it is, but the guys just understand, hey, this is the NBA Cup game. We're trying to get rolling here and we're trying to get to Vegas. We're trying to have all that stuff. There's extra cash behind it. They're all pumped up, and then you can just feel it in when you're watching these games. So I didn't think that was going to happen. If I'm going to be honest, I just thought, okay, it might be good for a year because it's new. Let's see what it's like in year two, and I've been really surprised by it. And then the fun part about it, too, is so many young teams are getting, valuable experience in playing games that matter. And I think that's a big thing right there. That's sort of an undercurrent of why this thing is so important.
I looked at a team like the Orlando Magic, and I know people are like, oh, my God, the Orlando Magic. Yeah, right. But before Wagner got hurt and before Banchero got hurt, it's almost like the purpose of this thing would be to introduce teams that have not been on the national radar for a long time. We haven't thought of the Orlando Magic since they traded Dwight Howard. We haven't thought of the Detroit Pistons since, their runs to the Eastern Conference Finals 16 years ago. These teams have been largely off the NBA map, but just – even the thought that one of these teams could get to Vegas. In Orlando, it's a little tougher for them because now you're without Banchero and Wagner and they got to play Milwaukee in Milwaukee. But just the fact that they get a taste of national attention and we domestically have to talk about them in ways that we didn't have to talk about them before, I think is a win for this whole NBA Cup experience.
Yeah, and I mean, let's also talk about Houston. Houston, yes. who made a run at the end of last year trying to get into the play-in tournament, didn't make it. But now you're seeing them kind of rise up, and this is an opportunity for them. If I'm Ime, I'm looking at it going I'm treating these playoff games because these guys don't have playoff experience. We're already in the top three in the West. It's let's go. you know, and I think it's more just let's get these guys kind of acclimated a little bit, and having that intensity of these games matter more. That means the, you know, the, we can't make the same mistakes that we make. We got to get better. And I think it's a good opportunity in terms of the organization and coaching wise to get teams kind of ready for these things that don't really have that experience. Look at the Pacers last year. Like, yep, that's a big success story for the NBA Cup and for the NBA. They go to the NBA Cup Finals, and then we know all the stuff that happened, but they make it all the way to the conference finals. Like, that's a lot, and that's, some of that has to go to the experience that they had in the NBA Cup. I'm going to attribute it to that from last season, and to part of it, them having the confidence that, hey, we can beat these guys and we can play with these guys, I think makes a big difference.
That knockout run, I think you learn more from the knockout rounds, because that's more of a natural basketball experience. It's home court games. It's not in a sterile environment. It's not like the NCAA, like in Vegas, where you're in a completely different environment, neutral courts and everything else. Once you get to Vegas, it's basically, you know, oh, okay, if we win, we win. But it's the matter of getting to Vegas. That's the thing. But you mentioned Houston, and we weren't even going to talk about Houston, but yeah, I feel like we're here. Let's get it a little bit. We don't think of the first line on Ime Udoka is not great coach. It's not coach who took the Celtics to the NBA Finals. It is all that other freaky shit that Ime Udoka was
hell of a story
was allegedly involved in, right? We don't think of him that way. He took the year off. He sat down. We thought that he was going to go a couple years. We thought that he was going to go to the Brooklyn Nets, right? He did not. That's when the Brooklyn Nets were still the Brooklyn Nets of Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, you know, and all those guys. He didn't. And he wound up going to Houston, and now he's in year two here. You've got maybe the greatest treasure trove of young pieces, veteran players that all are kind of on the upswing that, hey, maybe they can leverage for a superstar. Maybe not. But even if they don't, Mo, they've got a really good, active, energetic team that plays defense and plays hard.
I mean, they go so hard. I mean, first off, that's Ime's calling card. Like, as a coach, mm-hmm, like, when you look at it, his teams are going to play incredibly hard, and he's going to make sure they defend. Like, those are the two things he's really kind of, hey, Alperen Şengün, you're not playing defense? I'm sitting you down the stretch of the close game. I don't care that you're the major part of our offense. It's, you got to defend. And I think it's kind of setting that parameter for guys of like, oh, we have to play defense to get to play on the court. And I think that matters. I just think the beauty of it with everything that you said, Vinny, is that the whole thing of they can trade for a superstar if the right one comes along, but they don't have to make that move right now. They're third in the West, and it's not, and this is the Western Conference. Like, this is every night they're playing brutal teams. It's a challenge. The West is literally a bloodbath each night. And I think it's them holding up extremely well in that situation. Sure, the playoffs will be different. It might be a whole different environment. But I always also worry about teams trying to fast forward and trying to get there too quick, that they lose their magic or what it was that they were. And I think that's something that Houston's got to keep an eye on. If the right superstar is available, yeah, make the move. But like, I don't think they need to try to rush it right now. They're on a good trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, look, any superstar at this point in this NBA that's a little unhappy, chances is he's probably old.
Yeah.
And you probably don't want to mortgage and leverage. I'm sure you've heard some names, like I've heard some names. We don't have to mention those names here. But you're like, oh, yeah, he would make sense, except he's old.
Right.
That player would make sense, except he's old. And I don't know if that necessarily worked where you wind up artificially creating the championship timeline where even the pieces that you have remaining after making this big trade where you sacrifice all the picks, all the young players and everything else, that you have anything left. Now, we have to go to Ime's old team, the defending champion Boston Celtics. Because when we were texting before the show, you said something that is really hard to explain, but I feel like you said it succinctly in a text message. The Celtics make you play perfect. Like, if you are not completely on a string for 48 minutes, like concentrating on game plan and execution for 48 minutes, you're done. And you mentioned Giannis taking that three with, I think like a minute and 55 left or somewhere around there. Milwaukee was down one. And I would think that was like the play after the goaltend at the rim.
It was, I think they were down three. And it was like a transition. They had just gotten a stop. And it was, the goaltend had happened. And then they got another stop, and then they're running in transition, and he pulls up for three. And I just literally it's a no shot. It's you're just sitting there going, no.
Well, here's the thing. That's the one three he's taken in that game. His threes have dropped to such a number that I think it's like 0.6 a game or whatever, which is like a really a Herculean like amount of credit that we got to give to Doc Rivers and to Giannis to sort of say, okay, you can take more mid-range shots, even though the numbers say that you shouldn't take them, but you've gotten better at them. They're better at you taking these threes. You can't take that three at that point against that team. Talk about the stress that the Celtics put every team in the league under.
I mean, it's funny because it was because I got a text message from a friend who after saw my I post these clips up of during the games, and I'm watching them in games. And by the way, when I post these clips, it is just emotion sometimes for me where I'm just mad or shocked about something. So sometimes it just comes out and I'm just terrible shot. And he's like, man, I feel bad for Giannis. Like, he played a great game. And all we're going to talk about is that shot. And you're right. It was his only three in the game. And I'm just like, yes, totally. And I feel bad. But also, not then. Time and score. Like, for the love of God, man. You know, it's just like, now you like do it in the first quarter. But like, now you choose. But I think it goes to, and it's the credit of the Pistons. The Celtics. They make you play perfect. Because this is a close game. This is a... You got to stop. You have an opportunity to tie or take the lead. All that stuff on the other end. You have to get the right shot in that instance. It has to be perfect. And that means you got to put aside all the natural instincts. This is a wide open look. I'm in rhythm. And it's not just Giannis. This is everybody in the league. You know, you're in that position. If you don't make the right decision in that moment, you're going to lose the game. And it's just that simple, because they're going to come down and their offense is so high powered. They do such a great job with driving and kicking and then kicking out to three and swings and all of those things, getting you in rotation. They're going to get a good look. So it's just harder in that sense. So that's why you have to play perfect. And to go on top of that, then you have the Dame shot not too long, a couple possessions later. He comes off the screen. Derek White's playing great defense behind him. Listen, it's Dame. So I'm not going to criticize him too much on that type of shot. But that's another shot where you're like, oh, man, like you could have just attacked the lane, gotten two instead of trying to get to three and tie the ball game. You can't make mistakes against Boston. They are too damn good. Like, it's just that difficult when you're playing them. It's so hard to be able to stay that disciplined. And it's hard to do that for 48 minutes.
That's the thing. It's a discipline. It's a concentration. It's like when you think about the difference between championship teams who've done it and championship teams who can't get to it anymore. They can do it on a night. Like, they can get to it. They can reach that high note on a night of, we are completely concentrating for 48 minutes. And then you ask them to do it for four playoff rounds for 2.5 months. And it becomes this task that they just cannot no longer get to. Like, think about it this from this night. No Kristaps Porzingis. The Celtics shot 32% from three. You are winning in your mind if you're saying we're holding the Celtics to 32% from three, because that's not how they shoot normally. Middleton is back. Low turnovers. It's a game on the road. You're in it with a minute left. That's about all you can ask for. Mo, when did the Celtics become the team that we could depend on, as opposed to the team that we said, oh, no matter what happens, they're going to be the team to blow it? Like, they happen to grow up in front of our eyes, and now they're forcing you to play their brand of basketball, and nobody can out-Celtics the Celtics.
Yeah, so it started with Ime, to kind of bring it back to how we started the conversation.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, they also blew, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals against Miami that they were supposed to win. Almost came back, almost did the impossible coming back from 3-0 in that instance. But there is it started there. I think the addition of Drew Holiday makes a massive difference for them and Porzingis, I think. But I think Drew in particular, because he's won a championship. He understands it a little bit more. And it's not to say, listen, the Celtics team went to the finals. They've done, you know, they've done all before they won it. You know, they lost to Golden State. They understand everything. But it's like we say, it's literally sometimes comes down to one or two plays that can be the difference in these games. And I think they just learned, you know, through the failures that, hey, this is going to be how we got to play. This is the stuff we have to do. This is the discipline we have to have. Like, I give Tatum a ton of credit because we criticize him all the time, you know, with numbers and things like that. And I think a lot of it is unfair because I just think he's like, no, I'm going to do what I think's the right play. Now, it may not always be the right play, but he is trying his best. Some games he's a playmaker and a facilitator and things like that. And if a shot's not falling, you see him trying to just get other guys going and things like that. I think that's the growth. I think these guys growing and maturing and then having vets like Drew, who's actually won a championship, you know, I think all that stuff kind of just sort of happened overnight. It's, you know, I don't have a kid, but I imagine one day if I do, I'm going to look and be like, ah, damn, they're an adult now. Like, it's just kind of, this is sort of what happened with the Celtics. You know, we turn to them and go, oh, damn, they're adults now. Okay. They're
grown ready. Now. They get it. Yeah. They get it. And there's a huge difference because people naturally make the trade of Milwaukee trading Drew Holiday for Dame and sort of the domino effect that happens there. But there's a big difference, in my opinion, from you asking Drew Holiday to, on some nights, be your second best player or third best player with Chris Middleton to being your fourth best player or fifth best player if Porzingis is there. Sometimes Peyton Pritchard is going to be better. A lot of times Derek White is going to be better. You already got Tatum and you know what I'm saying? You have a fuller team, and I think it's hard to explain to people the difference between maybe where people looked at Drew Holiday as saying, okay, damn, did he underwhelm a little bit in Milwaukee after the championship? And you look at some of those playoff series too, man, he fits in perfectly with these dudes. He's the same player. It's just a different dynamic on that team and what they're asking him to do.
Yeah. And just, you know, on the aspect too with Drew, like, and this is going to sound like a shot at Drew, but he's not consistent enough to be a third option, you know, on a championship level team. Like, there are games, right. There are games in the Milwaukee finals run when they won it, where he took shots where I was just like, oh my God, like, that's the shot. Like, you know, shot selection for me is a big deal. Like, I look around,
yes,
and I'm,
yes,
just like,
clearly that is a Modakil tenet, y'all. Y'all have not figured this out 10 minutes into the podcast. We have had two. Oh, what are you doing? Shot selection.
There's a lot of that stuff. And that stems from the video room where I'm like, why? Yes. You know, there's a lot of screaming in video rooms. Because nobody can hear us. We're in the dungeons of the NBA.
Right.
It's just us in the locker room.
You're in a dungeon.
Yeah. But I just think the thing is, though, now when you put him in a position where, like, hey, like, your offense is going to be a bonus for us, we want your defense. And I think that's the other thing that, like, he brings that every night. And I think the ultimate thing when you're watching the Celtics too, just watch how they play, how they use Drew defensively, because he literally guards everybody. You know, he's guarding 1 through 5. And then on top of all of that, then you have him. They play a 2-3 zone last season. He's in the center of the zone. Porzingis is on the wing. He's in the center of the zone. Like, that's, they're using him as the center in that situation. And I think it just allows you to be more versatile defensively. I think that's the value of Drew. And I think him, again, offensively, there's nights where he goes completely off and he's going to make some of those shots that drive me nuts. But ultimately, you're just saying, hey, all of that's a bonus for us. But what makes us special is you on the defensive end.
Not just that. When Tatum and Brown are taking up the majority of defensive attention, like, there's things as a defense that you have to feel comfortable giving up. All right, we can't give up paint touches to Porzingis. We can't give up the easy switches to Porzingis when he's out there to just allow him to completely muck up our defense and have everybody in rotation. We can give up a wing three to Drew Holiday. We can even let Drew cut and say, hey, we're not saying give up a layup. We're saying let's take the lesser of all the evils and what the Celtics want to do. Because they're using the cut to set up the corner three. They're using the cut to set up everything else that they want to do. So sometimes it goes against everything that you teach basketball to be, which is why I hate sometimes this three-point heavy league. But I would never teach Mo give up the layup, but I understand why teams say, all right, man, just give them the layup.
Well, it's just, that would be my strategy with Boston is like, hey, I'm just limiting three-point attempts. They want to get up 1,000 threes. They're on that level. I just want to limit the three-point attempts, get them playing inside the arc. So that means, like you said, on that cut, I'm not helping from the weak side corner. But the problem is, and this is what makes them so challenging, especially in the regular season, That is hard to do in the regular season, night in and night out.
Everything tells you to go.
Well, it's just like, okay, all season long as a coach, I have been preaching, rotate weak side, rotate. Okay, right now, we're in mid-December. So I've been doing this in training camp. I've done this for the first month and a half, 2 months of the season. Hey, when you're rotating weak side, you're here, and then you rotate out. Okay, second night of a back-to-back, we're playing Boston. I'm going to come in and ask you to forget all of that and now just stay your ass in the corner. It's like, okay, the player I feel bad for, now it's instinctively for the past 2.5 months, I've been rotating. My urge is going to be to rotate. And now is that, and that's where Boston takes advantage of. I think in the playoffs, you have a better chance of, all right, remember all that whole philosophy we built all season? We got to change it up here, because in the playoffs, that's what you're supposed to do. In the regular season, you're trying to just reinforce habits, and that's what makes them so damn hard. It makes it so damn difficult in the regular season.
I'm not going to say that they're easier to defend in the postseason. I'm not even going to say that. I just think there's more variance in the three-point shot in the postseason than it is in the regular season. I just don't know if I trust it. Because I don't know about you, Mo. I looked at what games 1 and 2 will be in the NBA Finals. I think June 6th is game 1. I think June 9th is game 2. I'm booking hotels in Boston for June 4th through June 10th. Like, I just feel like we're going inevitably, unless something crazy happens and we wind up in Milwaukee, because we know we ain't going to wind up in Philly. Like, they're done, right? They're absolutely, unless Cleveland, or there isn't, to me, or maybe even the Knicks, right? I'll even venture to say maybe the Knicks, but I feel like smart money says we're going to be in Boston in the first week in June doing crab. What do they do? Like crabs, whatever.
Lobster stuff.
Lobster, whatever the hell it is. Anyway, whatever. We'll see y'all in June. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Lakers because LeBron missed his first game, man. I got questions. Back here on The Good Word with Mo Dakhil. Mo, the Lakers, Friday night, it was one of the weirdest finishes of the season, and I'm glad you highlighted it against the Hawks. Remember, LeBron was on this really terrible streak of not making the three for like a week or whatever it was, and he came back with like a 36-point triple-double, right? Trae Young, who is the one player you don't leave open when he doesn't have the ball, even though he's not great when he doesn't have the ball. There was some mix-up and switch between Anthony Davis and Gabe Vincent, and they gave up a wide open wing three to Trae Young to put the Hawks up 2. LeBron dribbled. They get it up the floor. LeBron takes a three from like 35 feet with like 3 seconds left. They miss. The Lakers lose. And then LeBron sits out Sunday night's game against Portland with like some left foot soreness or whatever it was. After being doubtful, then probable, then doubtful, then out. It's just a lot the Lakers got going on, because the Lakers always have a lot going on, Mo. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start on the floor, or do you want to start in the box?
We'll start on the floor, and then we'll go to the box, because that's the bigger issue. I just think on the floor, it's when you look at this team, it's their defense is just so bad. Transition defense is awesome. I mean, awful. Excuse me. The exact opposite of awesome.
It's awesomely awful.
Yeah. But it's 8 a.m. here. Like, I'm in L.A.
I got you.
Waking up. It's just awful. And you're watching it, and I rewatched the second half and posted clips, but you're just watching it where it's just effort even. You know, it's just running back. It's getting back in position and then rotating and things like that. It's all of that stuff there. And then even in the half court, there's so much confusion in terms of, you know, pick and roll coverages where there were times where Vincent thought they were switching. They weren't switching. And then Trae Young gets a wide open lane to the rim or Jalen Johnson or whatnot. Like, there's just so much confusion where they're not on the same page. And, you know, that happens in games. You're going to have bad games. But this is something we've seen with this Laker team for so long. And, you know, I love what JJ is doing offensively with this team. I think they just don't have the horses defensively. I just, when I look at their perimeter defense, like, Rui's good. You know, it's okay. After that, I'm like, all right, Gabe Vincent's fine. He's tough, but he's going to make mistakes. He's also a small guard. It's a very tough league for small guards defensively. Then I start looking at the bench and they're like, okay, you know, I mean, D'Lo's coming off the bench. All right, that's a win for you on the other side. Defense, you know, you're like, okay, we're going at him. It's just so many things where I just don't look at them defensively, and I go, like, they have the tools to really be a great defense. And that's with AD playing at a high level. But it's just, at a certain point, he's going to get tired. Like, it's just not possible. It's an 82-game season, as long as hell. He's going to get tired having to be the defense for this team. And I think that's the ultimate challenge for this team. Like, offensively, they're fine. LeBron, AD, they got it figured out. JJ actually has them running stuff. Like, that was probably my first note in the start of the season. Was like, because I saw it in preseason, and I texted some buddies, and I'm like, wow, like, they actually run stuff. They're like, let's see how it looks during the season. And like 2 weeks into the season, they're still running the same plays. And I'm like, that's something I'm not used to seeing too often with the LeBron team. And they're running a lot of different actions and things. I like what they're doing. Defense, man, they got to find a way to fix the defense. If they're going to have any chance, they got to be able. And a chance, I just mean get to the playoffs.
Right.
Got to be able to defend.
Well, the playoffs have become, or to say the playoffs, the play-in has become the LeBron Invitational. The LeBron Invitational, the Miami Heat Invitational, the Chicago Bulls Invitational, the Atlanta Hawks Invitational. Just pencil those teams into the play-in every year through some shape or form, and you know, you sprinkle in a Golden State, you sprinkle in a Sacramento, and all that type of stuff, right? LeBron's on-off numbers, Mo, they have shifted dramatically over the course of one season. Take this slump aside. I think the biggest show in decline has not been LeBron on offense. I think it's been LeBron as a overall team defender. I don't think he's been a great one-on-one defender for a long time, but I think he's always been able to sort of mask that by knowing where to be and being able to turn it up at different times. Right now, it doesn't look like the case. Like, when you talk about transition defense, he's one of the guys that's not getting back. And I think that permeates to the rest of the team, right?
Oh, that's the most important thing. Like, that's why, you know, we talked about my run with the Spurs. Like, that's something where you got to be able to yell at Timmy, you know, and that's what Pop has always said. I was able to coach Timmy. And when he says coach, I mean yell. But that means Tim's going to take it. And then they're going to go, you know, everybody understands. All right, well, if Tim Duncan, you know, Hall of Famer, all-time great, is getting yelled at, well, all right, I'm going to get yelled at too from time to time. Right. I can't say anything. This is the way Pop's treating everybody the same in that sense. And I'm not saying JJ's doing that or not doing that. I don't know I'm not in their locker room. I can't speak to that. But it's more just when your star player, your captain of the team, is doing the things that need to be done, everybody else has to fall in line. It's habits. It's all of those things. And everybody watches what the other guy does, and then they follow suit, you know? And I think it's in that vein, it's very tough. And then, you know, with the decline with LeBron, dude's 40.
I mean, natural. Like, it's natural decline. This is what happens.
We thought this was coming 5 years ago. It's, you know, it's here now, you know? But I think it's the most important thing is, they all have to understand that, like, this is the way it works, including LeBron. He's got that responsibility, fair or unfair. He's got to be, he's one of the leaders. He's got to be one of the guys that's rotating back and cutting and getting back and sprinting back. And he had a chase down block in that game, and we all went nuts or whatever, but there was two or three transitions where he wasn't even getting back. And so it's those types of situations you're looking at. And it's a thing, it goes back to the Celtics and everything we say. It's an everyday thing. It's an every play thing. You have to do it every time, you know, and it's not one of those things. If you get there late, fine, you got there late, but you got there. You tried to get there. But if you just don't get there, you don't even make the effort, and there are times in the defense in half court where he doesn't make the rotation, you're looking at it as a guy who's like, I thought you were my help, you know, and you could see it. I thought you were, I was pushing him to you, and you didn't show up. Like, all right, now how am I going to trust the coverage? And then that makes it harder as a coach, because now as a coach, you're yelling at the guy going like, you're not pushing him to the paint or to the rim or to LeBron. Like, yeah, but LeBron ain't there. And so right. I got to defend, you know, so it becomes a situation where it all sort of bubbles up into a whole situation where you're in the locker room all looking around going like, damn, man, like, we got to get there. And it starts at the top. It starts with him. And it starts with AD.
Tell you, no, it starts before that. It starts in the front office. It starts with the type of roster that you have. Like, you would not have thought, let's just say this, would you have thought, even after the Western Conference Finals, quote-unquote run, if we want to call it that, where it was the most competitive sweep in NBA history, right, that we were told, we would have thought that D'Lo would have been gone. We would have thought that Rui might have been gone. Not because they were bad, but like, oh, let's try to package them. Let's try to do something there. 2 years later, they're still here. Dalton Kincaid was a really good first round draft pick at where they got him at. Austin Reeves was really good for him to be, great for him to be undrafted. But when you look at the way that this team is built, do you know what Rob Pelinka's doing? Because I don't.
Yeah, he's making decisions to make sure he doesn't get fired. Just kick the can down the road. The thing we constantly hear from this Laker team, and they did it again, I think, recently, where it's always like, we can't evaluate the team until we're fully healthy. Like, when are you going to be fully healthy? And the guy they're talking about is Jared Vanderbilt, by the way. You're not, Jared Vanderbilt is not the missing piece for you. Okay, you have a negative 3.7 point differential. Jared Vanderbilt is not fixing that. Like, sorry, like I can make the evaluation of the team with and without him, with what we forecast for him to be and all that. And with their analytics department, they can do all that stuff. But it's just like we're constantly just kicking the can down the road. It's almost afraid to make moves. We talk a whole bunch. I mean, Rob Pelinka is probably becoming the Danny Ainge of like, well, we had trades we could have, had. And then, we just chose not to make them. It's, there are moves that can be made out there. The decisions are very tough that you have to make, but it just seems like they're almost paralyzed in the way of making it. Because it's so funny when you say it, and you clicked in my head when you said it. Yeah, immediately after the conference finals, we thought they'd package Rui and D'Lo. And we thought, okay, well, by that trade deadline, they'll do it. Nothing. Oh, the deals just weren't there. Okay. Well, you know why the deals weren't there? You're not calling enough. You're not really trying to make the moves. You're really just kind of sort of biding your time with all of this situation and hoping you made it. And you had the false presumption of, we made it to the conference finals, got swept, so we're fine. We should be able to make it to the conference finals again. We're a conference finals type team. I think teams get fooled into that way too much and don't understand sometimes, hey, we made it to the conference finals, but look at our road. Or look at how we got here. Look at all the other factors. Maybe we just got lucky, which is fine.
Yes.
Which is fine. You have to get lucky. Every team that's won a championship has gotten lucky. There's no question about it in my mind. But you also have to be real and understand what your team is. And everybody around you is getting better. And you're going to just stay the same is a problem. And I just think, honestly, it's just so weird to me. They're so paralyzed to move. Yeah, the Dalton Kincaid pick was great. They also missed on Jaime Jaquez the year before, which is a UCLA kid, which, by the way, I hate.
Right in their backyard.
I'm an SC guy.
Playing pickup every year.
He's right there. You know what I mean? You could just stumble upon him. It's right there. And you missed on him. Fine. Everybody misses in the draft. There's no, you're going to have those situations. But it's just like, you got to be better at what you're doing. At least you got to fix this somehow, and you can't keep kicking the can down the road. So my guess is we're going to hear a whole lot of bluster coming into the trade deadline. I mean, I feel bad for D'Lo. He's on the trade block every year. And then, he's going to have a great run January to February 6th this year. And then on the 7th, it might fall off. And I think that's the thing where it's like, we can't trade him now. We're playing so well. They just find the excuses over and over again, and it's frustrating. And I just look at them going like, you got to make a move.
Well, here's my thing, Mo. I would be frustrated for D'Lo because D'Lo's nothing more than what he's ever been throughout the course of his career. And you can look at him and say, you've gotten a lot more out of him than you've expected to be. But if that's the case and there is a ceiling on this and you fancy yourself as a championship organization, they tell us all the time, championship organization, they tell us all the time with the statues, they tell us all the time with, the videos and everything else, how they've won the most NBA championships until the Celtics, won the recent banner and all that type of stuff. You have to be that. And if you're going to shepherd LeBron James into this stage of his career, which is undoubtedly the final stage of his career, and you're going to go on and draft his son, which I don't know if that was the right idea for all involved, I feel like, Mo, there's way too many agendas there outside of basketball or outside of winning basketball. There's basketball agendas. I don't know if it's winning basketball championship style agendas. It makes me go back to Magic Johnson when Magic tried to tell y'all what was going on. And we just called Magic crazy old man, Magic tripping, Magic hating, and they won a championship. So everybody said Magic was really tripping. But it sounds like Magic wasn't all the way wrong.
Oh, no, Magic wasn't all the way wrong. He knew what was going on with that stuff, and I think he's there. He saw it. He's one of the smarter guys out there.
Like, I'm not going to be here.
Yeah. The meme is still the best. It's still like one of the best little, like, I just love it. I try to make that face to my wife every now and then. I get in trouble.
Don't get in trouble.
Happens from time to time. But like, I just think when you just look at the way it's kind of being built, and you're right, like so many different agendas within everybody on that team and all the way to the front office and the owner. It's just kind of like, that's the hardest way to win. You know, the teams that win all are pushing towards the same goal, and it's to win a championship. At the end of the day, we're pushing to win a championship, and we got to make the decisions we have to make to win a championship, plain and simple. And it's so hard when it's like, okay, but I'm going this way, and I'm going to go this way, and I'm going to go that way. And it's you're pulling in so many different ways, it's impossible, you know, and you're really in a challenging situation where, how do we fix this? Because, like, let's just be honest, the fix is going to be taking a step back. They're going to have to take a step back. Like, the fall is coming, you know, and they could try to scrap it, get into the play-in and stay in, and then try to work their way into the playoffs that way. But the fall is coming at some point. The man is old. And I say that respectfully, but, like, retirement's coming. He's already seen it, you know, and the big goal of playing with his son, checked. Like, I think that's it. I think he's kind of at that point where I think he realizes that the end of his career is coming. I'm sure we'll get a long retirement tour.
Very long.
Yeah, we'll get like a 2-season retirement tour or something like that. A documentary obviously will be coming out. And then that will be it. But it's like, but where's the winning? Where's the basketball play in it? And I know LeBron, when he's on the court, locked in. But it's just like, where are we going? And that's where I got to say, that's on the front office and ownership. Because even if they have to sit down with LeBron and say, hey, we need to figure out how we're going to win, how we're going to start charting our path. And the organization is famous for, hey, we ride with our stars all the way to the end. You know, they did it with Kobe. They were bad with those last few years with Kobe. But we gave him the huge contract. We're going to roll with him. He's our guy. Totally get it. Going to do the same thing with LeBron, because for them, they feel that's how we get the next superstar, is that sort of attitude. We treat these guys right, so we'll get the next guy. I go, you'll get the next guy because you're LA and you are the Lakers, but you need to start acting like the freaking Lakers.
I mean, put it like this. There's only in the NBA, there's one glamour franchise. There's one franchise that gets their guy every single time. It's the Lakers. You'll be fine. It's okay to have hard conversations. And at age 40, as I just turned recently, my shoulder hurts. I didn't do nothing. I just fell asleep and I woke up and my shoulder hurts. I can't imagine what it's like being LeBron James and having everything hurt. I saw a picture of that man's feet. Oh, no, I was trying to figure out if that was real. Like, third toe looked in the position of the first toe, which was in the position of the fifth toe. I couldn't imagine. I wouldn't be playing basketball right now. I'd be sitting, chilling, collecting my millions and billions while sipping on that tequila. I hope it's good. Maybe it is. Maybe it ain't. But we're going to take our last break. And when we come back on The Last Word, we're going to talk about one more champion of recent vintage. They got problems too. Back here on The Good Word with Mo Dakil Mo. I looked at the Denver Nuggets over the weekend. They had a hell of a weekend. They had a weekend like Alonzo Harris in Las Vegas before the Russians came to get them, right? You know what I mean? It was a very expensive weekend. They lost to the Washington Wizards, a team that hasn't won a game in over a month, like one of objectively the worst teams ever. And Nikola Jokic hit one of the greatest games in the history of his career, and it wasn't enough to beat the Washington Wizards. And then they come back the next day and beat the Atlanta Hawks by like 40. Okay, fine. My question is, as much as we are applauding, giving Nikola Jokic all the platitudes, all the respect, he might win his fourth MVP in 5 years and have one championship and one finals appearance to show for it. Like, something seems off there. So my question to you is, A, how do we put this in context for them? And B, why is that context named Jamal Murray, and why isn't he not holding up his end of the bargain?
Yeah, I think just putting it in context, I think it's just look at what this team is without Jokic. When you want to talk about how great Jokic is, I mean, the on-off numbers, again, it's nauseating, but it's like a 30-point difference or something along those lines.
You know, like LeBron in Cleveland the first time.
Yeah.
When he was the athletic marvel and the team just couldn't function without him on the floor because they were a bunch of, you know, the items from Sanford and Son's garage.
Dun, dun, dun. Sorry. It's one of my favorite theme songs. That's why you say that. I just have to go right into it. It's just a reflex. I'm an idiot. That's just these are the things that work in my little brain.
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry,
Bo. Sorry. These are the things that happen in my brain. It's just so weird. But when you look at it with Jokic, like when he steps off the court, you would think I'm playing. Like that's the level you think you're getting with that. And I think that's the problem with like the kind, like when we're trying to talk about how great he is, it's literally he just turns all of these guys into superstars with his passing, with his playmaking. I mean, I was talking with somebody on a show or something, and we were talking about Jokic. I go, like, the thing is, like, most defenses in a regular game, you know, they have to start at half court. If Jokic gets the rebound, you have to start defending the second he gets the rebound, because if a dude is streaking, he's throwing a dime, and he's going to find them. And if you might not even have noticed, like, it's just happening. You know, the ball's being inbounded, and he already sees something, and he's screaming at the ref for the ball. You know, he's already, your antennas have to be up almost the moment your shot goes up.
Right.
And then you have to be like, all right, where are we? And like, that's the challenge with just playing against Jokic, and then not even talking about just all his brilliance. We know all this stuff with that. The thing is, if you can't see that at this point, you're just trying to hate at this point. Like, there's just something about, you're never going to like the guy. There ain't a damn thing I'm going to be able to say that's going to convince you differently about this guy. Because it's just, at this point, it's just unbelievable how, like, when you watch him on the court, I've watched a ton of basketball in my lifetime, more than I probably should have, why I sing Sanford and Son. But he does stuff where I'm like, oh, like how? You know what I mean? Like, he throws a pass where I'm like, how did he even see this in a way? And it's just, and then throwing the pass in a way in which he does it, it's almost, and I hope it's not blasphemous, but it's magic like
absolutely,
you know, where you're just like, damn, like I gotta imagine the first, when you become his teammate, the first few practices you're just told, hey man, just have your hands up, and they're like,
what, it might hit,
like,
you in the head.
Yeah,
don't get hit in the head.
Like, honestly, you're gonna get hit if you're not paying attention. And in that sense, like, it's just, he is that good. And in that way, it's so hard to kind of, we've never seen a guy like this. And then it also, the reason why everybody hates on him is he looks like the Doughboy. Now, he's lost a lot of weight, but it's like dumpy looking a little bit, goofy looking. And you're like, you're not seeing amazing athleticism. He's not dunking on dudes. It's not a way where it's like, man, look at him, it's so ripped. It's not Giannis level.
Right. All,
the way we come to associate basketball players. No, man, he looks like the dude you sat with on the bus, you know, on your way to the game and whatnot. And then he drops 56, 18, and 12, and, you know, barely broke a sweat. Like, it's just, it's a level of greatness that I don't think we can fully comprehend, and it's frustrating.
Well, it's weird because you look at the numbers, and this is my concern. And it is a concern of mine because I think about, I'm a historian, the people who know me, who listen to this podcast, I go through this sort of spiel, but I think of players who've won 3 MVPs in 4 years. And I go back as far as playoff expansion being 1984, 4 playoff rounds, 16, at least 16 games, right? 3 MVPs in 4 years. Here's the list. Larry Bird won 3 in a row. Magic won 3 and 4. Michael won 3 and 4. LeBron won 4 and 5. And Jokic is going to win 4 and 5. All of those guys, with the exception of Jokic, all those guys, LeBron, Magic, Michael, Bird, have won multiple championships and at least had multiple trips to the NBA Finals during sustained periods of greatness. When we look at the Western Conference, Mo, we don't even look at the Denver Nuggets as a team that could make the Finals.
No, I mean, I mean,
they could, right? They could.
No,
but we're stretching ourselves to say it.
Well, look, they're seventh in the play-in. Like, they're in the play-in right now. Like, if we're not, it's one of those things where we're saying they could, in the sense of, like, any of the eight teams that get to the playoffs can get to the finals. It's some actual fact.
Right.
You know, and it's in that way. But, like, what we're looking at is, you know, this is a thing where all the teams you described, man, look at their number two guy. They all had guys with them, you know, and
even Scottie Pippen. Are you telling me to extol the virtues of one Scottie Pippen?
No,
Bull.
I didn't want to name names. But yeah, no, but like everybody had guys, right? Like, listen, those Celtics and Laker teams were stacked. You know, those Bulls teams, obviously, Jordan, Scottie, and then the whole squad is just perfectly in line. You know, those LeBron runs with, you know, he had Wade and Bosh and all of that stuff and everything that he had. Like, when you look at Jokic, it's Jamal Murray. And this goes to kind of what you're saying. It's like just the injuries feel like they've kind of caught up to him. It doesn't feel like he's that guy. You know, he had a hell of a run when they went to the finals and won it. But at the same time, it wasn't, you know, last year he wasn't great in the playoffs. He wasn't great in the Olympics and really struggled and all that stuff. And he's slowly getting into form. It's, you know, if he's not going to play at that level that they're going to be at, they need, they're in trouble. And then this goes back to also the front office. How many years can you keep sort of siphoning off and giving away veteran pieces that help you win championships, core pieces? You know, Bruce Brown and Jeff Green 2 years ago. This past offseason, you lose KCP. And your goal is to replace him with the young guys who have done a good job and have done their part. But that's not enough. I went into this season saying the Denver Nuggets are not contenders. I did. I just looked at the team. I said they are not contenders. I can find the audio. It was on one of the podcasts I was on. Early on in like September, I just literally just said, when they lost KCP, didn't replace him, and their response was Russ, and the last team to have replaced KCP with Russell Westbrook, we know how that story went. Like, you're just kind of, I just said, like, that's not enough. You know, they don't shoot enough threes. You're hoping Michael Porter Jr. is going to be that guy. We know what he is at this point. You know, it's all these stuff. Like, there's just not enough with this team, and I look at the front office, you can't kind of give away these guys and start worrying about that stuff. When you have a guy like Jokic, you got to maximize it, make moves, and bring in stuff. The way the team's currently constructed, they can't be contenders in my book. They're just not there. And as good as the West is, it's too damn difficult.
It's not just the CBA, right? It's ownership being on the cheap side. Like, I think Christian Brown has been better than anybody could have expected this year. Like, from like him, his athleticism, the element of athleticism that he has, the three-point shooting that he has, but it's not, nothing's in volume. Like, nobody is taking things in abundance. Even Jokic isn't taking, but you can't ask him to do more than he's done. I want him to do less so he can have more down the stretch in terms of gas, because, Mo, I covered that Western Conference semifinal series against Minnesota. He looked tired. And he didn't look tired because he wasn't in shape. He looked tired because he was tired of carrying his carcass of a team.
Your back hurts. Your back hurts. It's like, I got all this on my back. Like, what? You need to find guys that can take the stuff off of their shoulders so that he doesn't have to have these amazing nights for them to almost beat the Washington Wizards. Like, this is the stuff that you're dealing with. And it's so reminiscent of the Mavs after they won the championship with Dirk. And I'm so afraid we're going to run into the situation where Jokic is going to just be all by himself. And it's you know, he's slowly going to start getting rid of guys and things and tell him, no, this guy's going to be good. This is going to happen or whatnot. It's not going to be enough, man. Like, it's just not enough in the way the league is. And okay, fine, whatever. CBA, all that stuff. When you have a chance to win a championship, that's when you have to pay the prices. That's when you pay the prices. The only time you don't have to pay the prices is when you suck. And that's really the deal. So I think for me, it's just, I look at them going like, they're really just kind of giving this thing away.
No, I tell you what, I talked to an executive a week or so ago, and we were talking about Denver, and he was saying, those guys are so comfortable with Jokic being good or Jokic being great. Sometimes you need a guy that doesn't know that he's not the best player on the team. Like, you can realize and know, and the name he brought up, because he knows that I have an affinity for this player, he was like, Zach LaVine would do work over there. Because Zach LaVine still wants to actually be great and still want to be the best player on the floor, even if you know he's not. Like, sometimes you can just be comfortable. Oh, Nikola's going to do it. Jokic is going to do it. Jokic, like, you can't live like that. And I feel like it's easy for some guys to be satisfied. And honestly, this is the last point here. If you got three max players on your team, I don't care if the first max player is Nikola Jokic. Sometimes your stars got to be stars. And it can't just be Nikola Jokic being the star. Your dude's got to show up.
They paying you a max contract. There's a reason why you gotta live up to that contract. And it can't just be off of Jokic. Like, listen, all those guys, percentage has to go to Jokic. Like we say, we make this joke all the time, but like he's gotten a lot of guys paid. We talk about it with Steve Nash, got a lot of guys paid. Oh, yeah. He should have gotten a piece of everybody's contract. It's along those lines. Like, that's the hard thing. And I actually think LaVine would be great there. I think they gotta take a swing like that. They gotta take a swing at the deadline right now, because this just isn't working. And you know, it's what you said, it's what I thought at the beginning of the year. It's too damn much for Jokic to do, and it's not even about him being in shape physically or anything. It's just too damn much. We're asking so much of him that you just naturally run out of gas. It's the same thing for me with the Warriors. That's why I don't believe in them. They don't have a second option. Steph's gonna run out of gas. It's just going to happen. Like, this is the way it goes. The league is too damn tough.
And nobody's afraid of these dudes. And here's the other part. I'm going to close on this. Sometimes coaches got to coach a little harder and not just tell us how big of a badass they are, too. That, ladies and gentlemen, is my man, Mo Dakhil. Mo, how you appreciate you, man? Thanks for joining us, man. Really appreciate you, bro.
Thank you for having me, man. I'm pumped to be on.
Hey, we're going to have Mo on again. Thanks to producer Joe and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show, and everybody who has worked hard on this show. I'll be back on Wednesday with Titus and Ice for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.